disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give
in. Don't you give up, you're not allowed to give in. It's way too much work for us to do out there in this miserable, challenging, hostile world that we live in.
Come on, attitude.
Deb. Well, I mean, come on. Take a look around.
Come on.
What's going on, Deb?
The only thing you can control is what you make things mean.
Yeah,
and
you know,
your choice. I choose to see sunny days.
I know, but if the glass is really half full, it doesn't mean you're not going to run out of water.
Right.
You know, I'm saying seeing it that way. So you do concede we have, it's a
challenges.
Mad world, right?
Yes.
I'm saying it's a mad country. It's a mad world. Humans have gotten to the point of really, it's almost the point of no return. We ought to fix something. And, you know, I want to, we're jumping right in, obviously. Welcome. We're privileged. We're glad you've joined us today, our many intrepid.
We're male privileged.
Oh, we're male privileged and white privileged to have you join us today. And perfect. Deborah just segued into that because we're going to talk today about male privilege. Yes, it does exist, despite what people seem to think, and so does white privilege. And they're all sort of tied together, including corporate privilege. And, you know, given what's going on in the world and in Ferguson, Missouri, and it's just, I just read this morning, so apropos of all of this, we're going to talk about male privilege and what that really means, even for those of you who don't really think it still exists, because we're all equal now, right? Women can, you could be, our daughters could be whatever they want to be, right? That's what we tell our daughters, and that's what we've grown to believe. And to a certain extent, compared probably with the last many thousands of years before it was perhaps better than that once at one time for women. Let me just jump into this. I was reading a quote from Tom Hartman's book, Unequal Protection, which I recommend to all of our listeners. It's an erudite, highly researched book about the rise of inequality in the United States of America in the latter part of the 20th century right into where we are today. And here's the quote. In 2009, the transnational pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, that's Pfizer Pharmaceutical, pled guilty to multiple criminal felonies. Now, many people don't know that to begin with. It had been marketing drugs in a way that may well have led to the deaths of many people. Pfizer paid $1.2 billion, a criminal fine, $1.2 billion, not an insubstantial sum, but for Pfizer, you know, a bit of a write-down for that year, to the U.S. government, as well as an additional $1 billion in civil penalties. Yet, not one executive saw even 5 minutes of the inside of a police station or jail cell. In the autumn of 2004, Martha Stewart was convicted of lying to investigators about her sale of stock in another pharmaceutical company. Her crime cost nobody their life, but she famously was escorted off to women's prison. Had she been a corporation instead of a human being, odds are there never would have been an investigation. So, I mean, this is something we all sort of deal with on some level, although the corporate media does a really good job at sort of spinning it and whitewashing it. There's that term again. You know, so many of us sort of, it just sort of kind of percolates below the surface. But corporate privilege, white privilege, male privilege, I mean, corporations, as we've discussed recently, are persons now with constitutionally protected rights of free speech, and its money is its speech, which, you know, is an abortion, as it were, a travesty. There's a war on women in this country. There's a war on young black men and people of color, for that matter. And there's mad, crazy income inequality we haven't seen the likes of since the Gilded Age, when the robber barons and economic royalists of that time were running roughshod over the entire nation. The unequal distribution of wealth, by the way, during the Gilded Age, remained extremely high, although not as disproportionate as it is today. From 1860 to 1900, the wealthiest 2% of American households owned more than a third of the nation's wealth, while the top 10% owned roughly three-fourths of it. Historian Howard Zinn argues that this disparity, along with the precarious working and living conditions for the working classes, prompted the rise of populist, anarchist, and socialist movements. So here we are, Deborah, we're living in another gilded age for the top 1% this time, some would say the top 0.1%, and it's worse this time as all the advances in social democracy and all the regulation that came about through the many years of legislation and the New Deal and the Great Society, corporate power was regulated, greed, all of that now, corporate power, greed, all of them have been dismantled through a long line of Supreme Court cases, which culminated in the recent decisions we've discussed on the show, such as Citizens United, mm-hmm. which, you know, give the rich and corporations unfettered access to our political process. So, as Elizabeth Warren famously and routinely says, the game is rigged. It's just rigged now against consumers, women, people of color, the elderly, students, people living on fixed incomes, children, etc. So it is dark and dismal out there. I'm not saying we should give up. That's why we start this show encouraging people to get involved. It's like democracy is, you know, like a tag you're it game. We all have to get involved. We're the only nation in the industrialized world that doesn't provide health care to its citizens as a right of being born here. Isn't that absolutely insane? I mean, is that insane? Is that objectively insane?
And I think when you ask people that question, does everyone deserve clean air, clean water, and health, people would say, but of course.
Yeah.
And where it becomes the issue, well, I don't want to pay for it.
Right, but that's because they're morons, but they're
exactly.
also, but they're misinformed. I shouldn't really say that. They're not morons.
It's how you ask the question.
Well, it's how you ask the question, but even so, again, we shouldn't have to figure that all out for ourselves, and we all are responsible for the general welfare and the common
right.
weal and the commons.
Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, we would be able to pay for all of this, you know, if 25% of the corporations that don't pay any federal income
right.
taxes paid. Companies are now inverting, that's a new term, inversion. They're inverting their companies into and with foreign companies and offshoring their factories and jobs, hollowing out further the middle and working classes to a level not seen since the Great Depression. 75,000 companies, I want to repeat that, 75,000 companies, big companies, not jobs, but companies, have left the U.S. for cheaper pastures in the last 15 years, all because of our disastrous trade policies that simply don't protect us or our jobs. And again, that's just a function of deregulation and how can shareholders make more money. It has nothing to do with us, the citizenry, our children, the infrastructure, our legacy, our progeny, our rail beds and water supplies and bridges. I mean, we're fucking nuts. So, you know, the beat goes on. It's like a death dirge. And this is where I think, you know, one can perhaps occasionally with some humor indulge in a little gallows humor
mm-hmm.
because it's really bad. So what does all this have to do with male privilege and or white privilege? Well, everything in a top-down, profit-centered, male ego-infused cultural ethos that sexualizes and objectifies women and
mm-hmm.
pays them far
mm-hmm.
less than men, leaves unarmed black teenage boys to bake in the glaring afternoon sun, uncovered for 4 hours after he's been killed by the police. And then, of course, not to mention the militarization. It's like something from a bad dream. And a lot of our younger listeners and folks in our, as we know, and the people that didn't grow up with some other semblance of what it perhaps should be like, don't really understand how pathologically bad that is
mm-hmm.
and how that makes us all occupy. I mean, do you know in Missouri, what was it, Greenpeace or Amnesty International?
Yeah.
Not Greenpeace. Amnesty International
yes.
is there.
Is now there.
For the first time on
right.
on American soil.
Yes.
Monitoring.
Right.
right?
Exactly.
Over an 18-year-old getting shot and
right.
killed by police.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a sad and really kind of screwed up outrage. Now, back to male privilege. Listen, we don't have time today to go into, perhaps we will one day, and we'll have a guest who can talk eloquently on the rise of you know, women's rights and women's empowerment over the last, let's say, 150 years in our nation. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, the suffragist movement. I mean, when did women got the right to vote, I believe, in 1920-ish.
Yes.
I don't recall the exact
yes.
date. So just, again, that's only still our
right.
parents and great-grandparents right. were certainly alive then, when women still couldn't vote and exercised right the franchise to have any power. But you know what else defines, by the way, what defines privilege? Here's a good takeaway for today for people who don't know. What defines privilege? Are people saying, what the fuck is privilege? You know what privilege is? Not knowing you're the beneficiary of the privilege itself, be it white or male privilege. You don't know really what it is because you don't have to think about it.
Right? You know, it just struck me. I'm still stuck on what you just said about women not having the vote. And I was immediately going to respond, as I usually do, yes, men of color, black men, had the vote before women. But that always strikes me as, you know, like creating this hierarchy. But what just struck me was, yet again, white men communicated that men, it doesn't matter what color you are, but men in general are smarter and better than you ladies. And don't you worry your little heads
pretty
about
heads.
It. Your pretty little heads about it. You know, maybe this was something somebody else, but it just struck me that it's not really like a racial thing or a hierarchy thing. It was white men were saying men of any sort are more important and must be in control.
Right.
Even if you're black.
Right.
Or
right.
orange.
Even black
or
people.
Blue.
Black men are right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Then women.
Right. And that was right. Exactly.
It's like that's just striking
right.
me now.
Right. It's just striking you now. See, it's the whole girl thing. So even with all the legacy of slavery and how we still, of course, are racist in this country.
Completely.
But I'm saying, even so,
yeah.
black men still are higher up on the rung than women in general. And that reminds me of a Shirley Chisholm quote that I'm going to paraphrase. I don't have it in front of me. But Shirley Chisholm, the now deceased,
right. yeah.
but the first African-American female congresswoman in the United
yes.
States ever.
Yeah.
said something like this. You know what? I grew up in the South in the 20s. I know racism, brothers and sisters. I know racism. But I tell you something, racism pales every day in
yes.
significance to the sexism that I have to go through. So there is that. Now, for women of color, obviously, it's like a double whammy.
Completely.
But, you know, the fact is it's still the being of a girl part. For some reason, half of us, again, you know, I think I saw somewhere a quote that's, oh, it's actually, I think it's a Mark Twain quote, maybe someone else who said, you know, where would men be without women or
oh.
something like it, scarce or
yes.
very scarce. It's
yes.
like, what are we talking about? So again, someone else can discuss how we've gotten to this point of the suppression and repression of the female principle, the universe over and again, including here in the United States. And a lot of it has to do with, I think, this sort of corporate backlash. They don't really go together, our current culture of sort of the profitocracy, the oligarchy, and, you know, the more perhaps thoughtful, soulful, sort of female, you know, the yin and yang.
But it's about controlling women.
Right.
It really is about controlling women.
Right. To what end?
Well, just
just for
in whatever way. Yeah.
Okay.
In whatever way. The white male or men, but let's just, because there's many more white men, their own fears,
right.
their own insecurities, their own innate need to control. That's why financially, you know, we can pay you less.
Right.
We don't have to hire you. We don't have to give you jobs. And this whole conversation, this whole Hobby Lobby, the way it's been positioned has been, you know, in the whole abortion position, you know, trying to take away what is, and I forget what the numbers are, maybe you know, this Congress has proposed and passed in the last 6 years, 4 years, like Well,
it's all the legislatures around the country, right?
Okay, all the legislatures. Hundreds.
Right, hundreds.
Hundreds of bills restricting women's access
to reproductive
health. Choices. Right. And why is that?
Is it any of our fucking business?
And it's all couched around good girls don't have sex.
Right.
And it's about... And the way the media, the way even liberals, the way people are responding to it is, I'm just getting my thoughts here, but it's about controlling women.
Right.
And should good girls have sex? The whole Rush Limbaugh thing with Sandra Fluke.
Right.
Calling her a slut, to what you were saying about, you know, there is no slut shaming for men. He was caught, Rush was caught when he got busted with all his drugs with Viagra, which is covered by insurance.
And that's a recreational drug.
With a Viagra that he didn't have a prescription for.
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay? That he didn't have a prescription for.
But
women, if they want to have sex, if they want to be human and experience their full human potential, and that includes sex, women have a fear of getting pregnant.
Right.
Okay? So therefore, by prohibiting women from having birth control... It is a judgment that is made about women.
Right.
Good girls don't have sex unless they are married.
Right.
But men, male privilege, men, any old man, can have sex any old time they want.
Right. Exactly. And he also set up, the whole thing was just so messed up because when he was talking about it, beside the fact that why would it be any of men's business if women, that's also part of the emancipation of women, the sex positivity that we're allowed to talk about it and do it, and it's none of your business whether it's procreative or for fun, right? And it's obviously a double standard. But the other part, which sort of was this like straw man thing he set up and knocked down, was the bullshit of, oh, if she's going to have that much sex, you know, like,
I should be able to watch
it. But not only that, it's like it tied to it as if you take a pill every time you want to have sex. So in other words, he was, unlike Viagra or unlike a condom, with women, if you, especially when we're, and of course, the pill is not just used for having sex, right? It's part of reproductive health and was used for many other
reasons.
And
having a choice as to when 98% of all women use in their lifetime some form of birth control.
Right. But you also
so that you have some sort of control over the timing, the placement, financially, emotionally, that you are in control.
Well, control of your own body.
Of your own body.
But also,
and that women, when they have an abortion, know full well what they're doing. That there is not, you know, this picturing women as this, you know, so gullible, so befuddled that they can be talked into having an abortion.
Right.
Either you're for it or against it. You're either a pro-life person or you're not. So you get pregnant, you know, I'm not having an abortion, I'm going to have this baby. You get pregnant, you believe you can have a choice about this, this is what you're going to do. It's not a big dilemma. It's an emotional decision. It's not one that any woman makes lightly, having an abortion or not having an abortion and what those consequences are, but it is her choice to make.
Exactly. Well said. And also, I think the point I just was trying to make that I think that Limbaugh sort of perverted was that he treated each pill that a woman ostensibly would take with a sexual encounter, right? So it's, which is not, of
it's
course,
not
accurate.
It's
not how it works.
That's how it works with Viagra.
Exactly.
But he's such an idiot, he doesn't know.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm off.
Well, so did
I got
you know, Deborah,
your...
and here's what this might sort of blow the minds of some of our younger listeners who just don't know this because we live in a bubble and we don't talk about this and we don't teach civics anymore. The five things that women couldn't do
this
as recently as the 1960s. Now, you and I were alive and well and well into our childhood in the 60s, right? People are not, and we're not that old yet. Many of us are still alive, and we're alive during that period when what women couldn't do as recently, what women couldn't have or attain as recently as the 1960s. Couldn't get a credit card.
Yeah.
Couldn't get a credit card without her husband co-signing.
Exactly. And I can remember being in the department stores, school shopping with my mother and, you know, the litter of kids, and my mother trying to pay, and the credit card said my father's name.
Right.
And she would try and use it, and they had to call him
right.
to get permission for her to use his credit
right.
card. And my mother worked full-time. She was one of the only women
right.
in the neighborhood who worked full-time because she didn't want to be a stay-home mother.
Right, right.
And she would be humiliated. And she would go home and cry to my father, and not cry, but be angry. I want my own goddamn credit card.
Right. Did she
this
get
is,
one?
I make. No, she couldn't get one.
Well, if he co-signed.
He had to co-sign one for her ultimately.
Right. Well, like a dependent. Right. Which
exactly.
you give, like you give
that
your kid.
She was, exactly.
Right. So women couldn't have a credit card. Again, how would that, you know, again, I assume that today many of our Generation Xers
and
or Yers.
And before that, you couldn't have you couldn't own property.
Well, you couldn't own. Forget it. I'm just going back to the 60s. I'm saying
right.
that's why before that it was completely chattel-like. But in up until the 60s, you couldn't get a credit card without your husband, without either being married and having your husband co-sign.
Or your father.
If you were single, right. If you were single, your daddy, even if you were of the age of majority, could co-sign for you. You couldn't serve on a jury. Hello. It wasn't until the 70s, the early 70s, that the Supreme Court made all 50 states women could and would ultimately serve on juries, but they were considered too delicate. Even
seven angry men. I mean, the 12 angry men.
Right. The other five were angry too.
Yeah.
And you know, even John F. Kennedy said, and I should have this quote in front of me, but something John F. Kennedy, you know, at the time, something of a progressive, said something about it. Was some quote that we really want to get women involved up to their capabilities and everything, but as long as we sort of keep in mind that their primary function is still in the home. So as long as you took care of the kids and your husband comes first, which is the
right,
you know the
point.
The presupposition that we should now utilize their very deep capabilities that we hadn't been doing. But it was still, this is 1962, I believe he made that speech. Clearly women were second class. If you were a girl, you could say, shit, I wish I were born a boy because I'd have a lot more opportunities. In fact, I would imagine that's what women might have often said to themselves if women can hold that thought in their head.
Yes.
Okay. So, you had that thought?
No. Well, I just remember when I was 12 and I tried to get a paper route.
Oh, no girls allowed to deliver papers. So, it's dangerous. Got to watch out for you.
The bags are really heavy.
Yeah.
So I wrote a letter to I was living at the time, my parents were living in New Jersey. So I'm calling out New Jersey. But I don't think it would have been different anywhere else. And I was a dancer, and it costs a lot to take all the classes I went every day, all the different things I studied. And, you know, my parents said, you know, you should try and get a job babysitting. Maybe you could get a paper route. Maybe you could do something to help pay for some
right.
of this. And I wrote a letter to the newspaper saying, I'm a dancer and I'm a really good student and I think I could, you know, do well with a paper
route. Like a
route.
Bike route?
Like a regular paper route. Yeah, bike.
Yeah.
They published my letter in the...
Isn't that a cute letter?
Yeah. And that's the tone. I should really bring it in.
You should find it.
And I have it in my scrapbook because it was like my first notoriety.
Isn't that special?
And they wrote and said, you know, Debbie, we don't give those because those paper bags are really, really, they're much too heavy for you. So you girls are just going to have to stick to babysitting to make your money.
Right. That's a nice
and they went through this thing and my mother and I somehow found it, you know, discovered I was in this, you know, in the paper and were like, you know, WTF. Not exactly saying that, but it was like, what? It's not too heavy, but so patronized.
Right.
Even then, and
right.
We couldn't really articulate.
We could.
There
was
anger.
Just another bullshit excuse to
exactly
make the pool of applicants smaller and all boys.
Exactly.
Okay, so we know no credit card without husband co-signing, couldn't serve on a jury, couldn't go on the birth control pill. So back to birth control here, I guess that's worse than Hobby Lobby. Couldn't even get it.
Right.
So forget about it. You had, you know, you're either having babies, you're not having sex, but you have no control of your own uterus.
Right.
Couldn't get an Ivy League education. Harvard, Princeton, Cornell, yes, but at Harvard, Princeton, Yale, no women until also into the 70s. And the fact that it was at that point, I think that Harvard merged with Radcliffe, but I mean, again, until recently. And look, our mothers didn't even go to college. I don't think it was Vassar. It's Radcliffe is the Harvard one. But, you know, and our mothers didn't even go to college. My mother, who's still, you know, is in her 70s only now, but didn't go to college because they didn't. You don't. You have, she had, you know, had me when she was 20. Okay. And couldn't have any semblance, last but really not least, any semblance of workplace equality. We all, you know, I happen to have missed the whole Mad Men boat. I know everybody loves, I think even you love the show, right? People love the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know it, so I can't, I'm not criticizing it, but that was the time that really not, that stuff, I don't know how they romanticize it, but it just really wasn't at all cute if you were a woman who didn't have one of those top flight guys to take care of you. You couldn't be independent. So all of our female, all of the women out there now that just say, you know what, I got my apartment and a job, I could do what I want. If I want a guy, I could get a guy, I could do whatever. Like men, I mean, women still can do that these days, maybe earning less money, but you can shoot, although there are, and we're going to talk about it now in my male privilege checklist.
Yes.
About the consequences if you're a woman who says, I'm going to go through my life like George Clooney did till he was 53, and everybody's going, what a great playboy. He's just like he's a confirmed bachelor, not a hoe.
Right.
He's not a slut, right? So, you know, that was, so what is male privilege? Let me give you the Wikipedia definition of male privilege. Refers to men having unearned social, economic, and political advantages or rights that are granted to them solely on the basis of their sex and which are usually denied to women. That's your basic Wikipedia, you know.
Say that again.
Okay, I will do that. Male privilege refers to men having unearned social, economic, and political advantages or rights that are granted to them solely on the basis of their sex, which are usually denied to women. So, simply, you have a penis, you're a boy.
Mm-hmm.
You get these rights by virtue of being a boy.
Yeah.
You're walking upright, and you're, you know, there are other factors, certainly, and if you're, again, a white male, and I've only realized this more, I didn't fully realize this when I was a young public defender, white male in the Bronx back in the day, that so much of every perception of every day that people just assumed when you know, you could have an earring, you could be all disheveled, you could be a mess, you could work triple shift and look like heck, but nobody thought you were anything but a lawyer. And they give you this, you know, like Louis C.K. says, basically, you could go back to any time in history.
Yes.
If you're a white male, and the second you get back off the time machine, table for one, sir? That's the only, right? I mean, it's just,
yeah.
it's unbelievable. Now, again, do I consider myself fortunate that I'm a white male? Yeah. I mean, as Chris Rock has said in one of his bits, he said, there's not a white man in this room that would change places with me, and I'm rich, right? I'm saying, and he's right.
Right.
So, you know, that's the sort of very dry, again, Wikipedia definition of male privilege. Now, let me talk a little bit about what it actually is for those who don't think about it. And you tell me if you're a male, if this may apply to you, if you feel that this is also perhaps true. My odds of being hired for a job when competing against female applicants are probably skewed in my favor. And the more prestigious the job, the larger the odds are skewed. Now, by the way, this list has been an amalgamation that's been around on the internet for a few years now, and it was a compilation from a few places. So it's not my intellectual property. I didn't write this, although I've edited it a little bit. But this is, again, for men, the male privilege checklist. So the first is, my odds of being hired for a job are better than female applicants, all of the things being equal.
Yes.
Two.
And
is that
research,
true?
Study after study shows that.
That's absolutely.
There was just something I saw, applicants, musicians, that when they had to audition behind a curtain, it leveled the playing field.
Right, exactly.
Right, because men were hired,
right,
were better players.
Well, we just saw that when they took the name off of the CV, the resume.
Yeah, that was another one.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Same resume, but it doesn't say now Rachel or John.
John. Right.
Well, but then when they do say Rachel and John, John gets the call, John gets the job.
John.
No question.
Right.
Two.
That was the John Oliver thing.
Oh, was that
that
the
was
John
that
Oliver
John
thing?
Oliver yeah. piece?
See, we should be playing all these clips.
I know, we should have. And that's why the answer was women just have to change their name to John.
Right. We'll have. Hey, Martin, can you get clips up this quickly? No, I don't think so. Okay. Two, I can be confident that my coworkers won't think that I got my job because of my sex, even though that might be true.
Right.
Right. Three, if I'm never promoted, it's not because of my sex. And most of these, you could add in white privilege to male privilege with all of these, right? So if it's just like with, and I've read these about white privilege, you know, if, well, it's the same thing with it, you know, if someone doesn't hold the door for me, or if somebody's rude to me, if you're a person of color, you have to think to yourself, is that happening because I'm black? Is that why they did this to me?
Right.
I'm black? Is this happening? Did I just get, you know, spurned? I'm on the back of the line, almost like the back of the bus because I'm black. White people never have to think of that. So certainly if I'm not promoted, just like some of the people who call our office with failure to promote, and we certainly have that where people say they didn't promote me because I'm black. It may very well be true in a racist culture, but you don't know that. And the point is that people are always scratching their heads and questioning it, and it's very challenging and precarious way, I think, to live. It's not good for your stability.
Right.
Four, if I fail in my job or career, I can feel sure this won't be seen as a black mark against all men's capabilities in general, right? If I'm a failure, it's not like, oh, let's just, she's a girl.
Yeah,
you know,
we
lady
can't
driver.
Hire any more men.
Right. I'm far less likely to face sexual harassment at work than my female colleagues. I guess that doesn't need much of an explanation. If I do the same task as a woman, and if the measurements are all subjective, or if the measurement is at all subjective, chances are people will think I did a better job. Also studied up the wazoo.
Completely. Proofed.
If I'm a teen or adult, and if I can stay out of prison, my odds of being raped are relatively low. So if I'm a boy, and if I'm a teen or adult, differentiating between now children, and I can stay out of prison, because I assume that boy and girl kids with pedophiles are probably maybe even kind of equal at that point.
Hmm.
But once you're old enough to be a boy or a man, a teen or an adult, and you're not in jail where you might be raped more often than out of jail, my odds of being raped are really insignificantly low, unlike women, which I think the odds are very high.
Right.
At least for a sexual assault. On average, I am taught to fear walking alone after dark in average public spaces much less than my female counterparts are.
Right.
If I choose not to have children, my masculinity will not be called into question,
right?
If I'm not having kids, right? We know people, men, nobody says, we must be, nobody really says anything about it. It's like, well, he's smart, whatever. He's choosing not to have kids. Men can be single well into their 30s and no one notices. This is the next, this is number 10, but it runs off from number 9. Men can be single well into their 30s and no one notices. Men also get far less harassment if they choose not to have kids. It's also acceptable for men to remain, quote, bachelors for life, although most eventually opt for the male privileges inherent in marriage and heterosexual marriage. Women are under fierce pressure to get married and have kids sooner rather than later. 11. If I have children and I do provide primary care for them, I'll be praised for... I'm sorry. Actually, this was another 10. That's why I missed it. My typo. If I have children but I do not provide their primary care, my masculinity will also not be called into question, right?
Of course.
If I have children and I do provide the primary care for them, I'll be praised for extraordinary parenting if I'm even marginally competent.
Mm-hmm.
If I have children and a career, no one will think I'm selfish for not staying at home. Men are expected to have a career, while women are expected to sacrifice their careers in order to care for a man and raise his family. Similarly, a man is more likely to get hired and promoted at any given job than a woman.
Yes.
This favoritism towards men increases as the job becomes more prestigious.
Fatherhood is an advantage to men.
Right, right. Well, there's that also, and this was a Katha Pollitt quote from years ago, which I'll just sort of mangle now, but to paraphrase it, it was something like, a very small percentage for women who are super successful in the top, let's say 1 or 2 or 5% of female earners, most of them are childless. The yeah. kick-ass take yes. names women in our culture, most of them don't have 3.2 kids. Most. There are exceptions, of course, but most. And men, the most successful, often have the stay-at-home wife and the family, you right. know, because who's going to take care of the homestead? He right. needs a wife.
Yeah.
Well, don't women need wives,
Many
too?
Many working women say the same thing.
I need a wife. Right. That term has become, right? Wife has other meanings beside the female spouse. Okay, if I have children and a career, I think I read that. Okay, my elected representatives are mostly people of my own sex.
Mm-hmm.
The more prestigious and powerful the elected position, the more this is true. When I ask to see, quote, the person in charge, odds are I'll face a person of my own sex, probably my own race. The higher up in the organization the person is, the surer I can be that it'll be a similarly situated white male dude. That might be duplicative. As a child, chances are I was encouraged to be more active and outgoing than my sisters.
Wait a minute. You were?
Well, I didn't have sisters. But if I did have sisters, it's saying that as a child, and I don't know whether your brother was, but chances are that I would be encouraged. Go out there, get a Little League, climb that tree, don't be a sissy.
Yeah.
And girls, I mean, at least certainly in our generation, we're still playing with, you know, would still you were in a
yeah,
dress.
Yeah, girls
and
would play with
knee.
Dolls and
right.
boys will play with trucks.
And, what are you, and if you right. didn't, and if you skinned your knee too many times or you're out there, you're a tomboy and perhaps you're going to be a lesbian. And you're ready.
A tomboy, yeah.
Right. Which they grow into, you know,
right.
dykey things, right? Isn't
yeah.
that all part of a... Okay. Young boys are typically given the freedom to play and be a child, while young girls typically do household chores. I don't know how true that is anymore. The innocence of boys is protected, while 54% of girls will be sexually abused. That's
yes.
still true.
Yes.
So I think there is probably still more freedom for the sort of boys being boys thing and to go out and experiment and you don't worry about those. What people always say, right? I'd rather have girl. Why do we always say, and we talk about daughters that we both have, that so much easier, people say, having sons. You don't have to worry about them as much, right? And people say that.
Yes.
I mean, they say it for other reasons too, like girls are such high maintenance and they're,
yes.
you know, emotionally unbalanced. There's not more, you know, overlay and projections. But it's easier because you don't have to, you know, worry about them so much because they're, because boys are
they're not being
in charge. They're the
accosted.
Alpha.
Right.
Right. Unburdened with as many chores or other domestic responsibilities, men have much more time for leisure. As a child, I could choose from an almost infinite variety of children's media featuring positive, active, non-stereotyped heroes of my own sex. I never had to look for it. Male protagonists were and are the default.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, chances are I got more teacher attention than girls who raise their hands just as often. We
yes,
know that for a
yes,
fact.
Yes, for a fact.
And that's because we've read those studies. In fact, girls who by the time in the
it's equal.
Right, until like 12.
Yes.
And when the adolescence kicks in, if the girls are straining like the boys do to like, I know the answer, I know the answer, being a smarty pants.
Teachers.
Well, the teachers won't pick on them, but the boys will also say like, what's the matter with this like bitch? What is she like?
Right.
First of all, you know, she's not, who wants to talk to her, date her when she's competitive with me and maybe even smarter than me.
Right.
She doesn't know her. I mean, most more men are, boys, men are intimidated by, right, really whip smart girls.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
For
right.
crazy reasons.
Right.
Okay. So.
And women want to be accepted and liked. Much
right.
more
so
than so
you have
boys.
To kind of be a little bit so that you could feign
placate,
a little ditziness
yeah.
and just be like, oh, I don't know. I'm just a girl. I don't really know that. As a child, okay, in my day, week, or if my day, week, or year is going badly, I need not ask of each negative episode or situation whether or not it has sexist overtones. Now, again, that might that comes from a white privilege. That's where it was, these were taken from. So that I think that if I were a person of color, I probably often, or I would have gone through a period where I often said that. I should say it because I'm black, you know,
right.
because it happens every minute of every day.
Right.
I remember being in court where a distinguished attorney of color with really with gorgeous, you know, in fact, he was a really handsome man, light skinned with blue eyes and salt and pepper hair. He had to be in his 50s back then, was in the front row where the attorney sit. And I'm this like little pisher, you know, 30-year-old, you know, legal aid lawyer with an earring. And many of us were, you know, dressed like schlubs. Some young white court officer, and they all were mostly, and even the black ones would have probably, you know, said that, came over to him and said, sit in the, this is just for attorneys, go in the back and wait for your attorney. And I saw this man, at the time I didn't say anything, I was so, you know, just watching him say, I am an attorney. And then as when the court officer walked away, he said to himself aloud, am I an attorney? Wait for your attorney. He was hurt and must have been listening, hearing this for 30 years, and even right. at his age. It's just, you know, it's just...
Well, and then we wonder why people of color are having the reaction in Ferguson well, that they are, because right. if you're continually harassed...
Right, right.
If you're constantly stopped just to be questioned...
Come on, you know, I always say, and I guess because the statute of limitations has passed on this, I could say it. I remember driving down to Florida with a friend in the 70s on the side of the road on I-95 in Georgia doing drugs on our 24-hour ride, like drugs, all in the front with our panoply of drugs, our smorgasbord of drugs. Suddenly I see in my rearview mirror a police car behind us flashing red lights. It's dark. I stick my little 17, 18, 19, I think I was 19-year-old, you know, head with my, you know, dirty blondish hair out the window. Well, it was this after the summer. And I stick out my head until when he's in the, this Georgia State Trooper is at the back on my sort of tail fin, at the back of my car, and I stick my head out and I say, you know, what's going on, officer? And he says, which was, of course, probably the luck of the draw and my stars aligned, but he says, just want to see if you boys are okay. And I said, well, we're fine. We're just coming from New York. We're tired. We're resting. Thanks for asking, whatever. He said, well, have a good trip. Now, if I were black, I'd be breaking fucking rocks still today for
exactly.
what I had in that car. And yes. I know, I mean, that's white privilege, male privilege, white privilege mostly there.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
I guess with cop stops, women, there's a privilege there often with young women in cop stops for different reasons. Okay. So, I can turn on the television or glance at the front page of the newspaper and see people of my own sex widely represented. If I'm careless with my financial affairs, it won't be attributed to my sex. If I'm careless with my driving, it won't be attributed to my sex, lady drivers. If I can speak in public to a large group without putting my sex on trial. Even if I sleep with a lot of women, there's zero chance that I'll be seriously labeled a slut. Nor is there any male counterpart to slut-shaming or slut-bashing. None.
None.
Right? I mean,
right.
None. Again, George Clooney, 50, I think he's 53, he just got married. But prior to that, he's a playboy like Bill Maher. I'm a, you know, it's like, shit, everybody's just like, you're the man, right? You're not just some, what, you're just like a promiscuous hoe.
So right.
It's stark. I do not have to worry about the message my wardrobe sends out about my sexual availability. Hello.
Yeah.
My clothing is typically less expensive and better constructed than women's clothing for the same social status. While I have fewer options, my clothes will probably fit better than a woman's without tailoring. I don't know what.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
is that true.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And you can buy a suit, and the tailoring is a given. Women have to pay extra.
I see. Oh,
to,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, totally. Definitely.
So you have to buy off the rack and expect it then to get
yeah.
it like customized for
totally.
It.
Totally. Yeah.
Unbelievable. It is normal for men to, speaking of clothing, here's another reason that male privilege is male privilege. It is normal for men to be comfortable and mobile when dressed. Women's fashion is impractically expensive, time-consuming, and deliberately inhibits comfort, mobility, and safety. Utilitarianism is seen as a virtue in men, while women who forego impractical clothing or embrace utilitarianism are chided for letting themselves go.
Right.
Again, back to the hooker
yeah.
pumps or whatever they're called.
Fuck me pumps.
Well, fuck me pumps is one of those, and I've heard a less profane, somebody called them... whatever they're called else, but those stiletto heels and all the rest of it, I suppose, again, and the makeup and everything you have to do to put yourself together so someone doesn't say, what happened to your face today?
Right. Well, I chose to stop dyeing my hair.
Well,
for
fabulous.
Men, this is a natural
right,
kind of
right,
thing.
Gray.
And it's odd when
exactly.
a man actually, and I want to say, and the ones that do, tend to not have
like
very
shit.
Good
right,
colorists.
Right.
But for me... This was all, every one of my friends said.
Really?
What are you doing?
Well, I don't know why being male looks great, but...
I think so, too. Thank you
men can,
much.
And speaking of that, men can go gray,
yep.
get fat, or age in any way they wish. For men, aging adds character and confers perceived wisdom
mm-hmm.
and commands a certain amount of respect. I'm reminded of, during the presidential, the run-up to the 2000... presidential election with George W. Bush and Hillary Clinton. Was that 2000? Was that 2004?
No, yeah.
2000? Before, with the primaries. Whenever Hillary Clinton was running against George Bush, so it must have been because it was the primary, I guess, she lost, in the 2000s, in 2000, 2004, she was 60 years old at the time, so it wasn't that long ago. He was 60 as well. They were both the same age, give or take a few months, I believe. Rush Limbaugh was on, you know, bloviating on the air about, do we really want to watch this, like, woman when her cankles grow old, you know?
Right.
And George Bush, as we all know, was, like, central casting, perfect power for that kind of guy. You want to see, if he was an actor, that's that look that you'd make. He'd be the judge in the, you know, in the series. He'd be the Marcus Welby doctor. He would instill such confidence in people. Like, wow, he's a beautiful, that's perfect. Where women have reached already at that point the downside of their peak, right?
Yep.
So, women are under constant pressure to do whatever it takes, including surgery, to remain young-looking. Anything less, and a woman is also admonished for letting herself go. Men may have hair on their heads or body and don't have to take much care of it. Women are seen as lazy, unhygienic, and disgusting if they don't remove or arduously style all the hair on their bodies. Men are allowed to be bald, whereas women must wear wigs. I mean,
you know,
what's up with
think
that?
About a Fox News.
Fox so-called news.
So-called news.
Fox faux news.
The concentration on women's looks.
Well, that's unbelievable. Well, first of all, they all look like the same, you know, prototype, don't they? I mean,
well,
from what
they all start picking on Elizabeth Warren, look at her. Hillary Clinton, look at her. Nancy Pelosi, look at her. That old bag, Barbara Boxer, go like that. There's such a concentration on
But the superficiality of it just seems to me that the women on Fox News, not really knowing them except Megyn Kelly, but whenever you see that composite of the photo, they all have like Tammy Faye Baker, you know, makeup on.
Right.
They're all blonde. They're all pretty, conventionally pretty girls with, you know,
pretty
legs
show.
They all have legs, you know, bearing skin, pretty white. Right. So, you know, it's fitting, obviously, a fairly superficial mold.
Yeah, and actually, most of the men are all have no color either.
Well, that's certainly true. Although some of them are ugly as fucking sin, right?
Well,
that is that guy, Krauthammer or some of them.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Okay.
Chuck.
The grooming regimen, here we go, expected of me, is relatively cheap and consumes little time. In fact, I run my fingers through what's left of my hair. I mean, nobody gives a shit, right? It's different. If I buy a new car, chances are I'll be offered a better price than a woman buying the same car, so they say. I mean, I probably get ripped off because I don't know anything, but I'll bet just because of my white male privilege, and if I walk in there and white male privilege, I'm a lawyer, I get to, they probably don't rip me off as quite as much as they might do. And we know they do, right? Like they do in housing and in car dealerships, minorities, and perhaps a woman who does.
Sure.
If a woman comes in alone, they're going to try to rip her off. I mean, I have that confirmed by my stepsons who sell cars or did sell cars. Okay, if I'm not conventionally attractive, the disadvantages are relatively small and easy to ignore. Right? I mean, that's, you could be kind of an ugly man.
Well, if you're gonna be short, you better make a lot of money.
Okay, so the short part, stature. Okay, well, it gets a point. There is a point. There's a critical mass or height. Right? Okay, but then there's also how short, right? Because you know, you get to the point if you're like 5'5", or if you're Danny DeVito, you better be. You know, it's going to be hard. But if you're, let's just say you're 5'8 or more, and you can get away with it, but you just basically are not really a handsome person.
Right.
You're just kind of, as my mother and father say, meese. You're just a little bit, and there's nothing about you that, you could still, if you have, I mean, obviously, if you're poor and you're everything, you know, but for the most part, no one's going to hold it against you in the way that, you know, so you're an ugly guy. I mean, that's not everybody could be a model. But if you're a quote-unquote, or if you're a not conventionally pretty woman, that it's easy for men to just, you know, you're a beast. You're written off, and I know this because I pass, right? I pass. I've spent my lifetime listening to what men say, and what men often say is, you know, if when men are free to just sit, say, talk about chicks, is that if someone is not quite like sexual fantasy material, her value diminishes in greater proportion to her value than men do.
Completely,
right?
Yes.
I can be loud with no fear of being called a shrew. I can be aggressive with no fear of being called a bitch or even a bastard by my aggressivity. That's expected that I'm a man. I can be confident that the ordinary language of day-to-day existence will always include my sex. Quote, all men are created equal, mailman, chairman, freshman, etc. The very dictionary is stacked in men's favor. Words that reference a group of people typically default to a male noun. Mm-hmm. Again, back to mankind, you guys. Language makes it easy for any man to lash out at women, while the words needed to retaliate against men don't exist. A lot less. It's almost like when, and also the reverse with race, you know, calling a white person a cracker, which is always, you know, even when Richard Pryor did it, is like kind of loses some of the zing to what we have at our disposal in terms of racial epithets.
Yes.
And with women, shit, you could come up with the worst of them.
Right.
And what are you going to call a man? A dick, an asshole, a putz? But there's nothing there that would like cut him to the quick,
right,
like it does with women. My ability to make important decisions and my capability in general will never be questioned depending on what time of the month it is. which is another thing, reason why at least they've argued women shouldn't be president here, right? It's like, I don't know if you've heard this.
You don't want her in charge of the button.
You don't want her to, you know, in the middle. Can you imagine when she's PMSing and she's up there going, I think I should like nuke these motherfuckers. Right, I'm saying, but the whole, and some people go, well, isn't that a, I mean, I, you know, we won't deign to even answer that. But that is something that comes up in civilized conversation. That is as if women during, and some, I mean, obviously all of this is just hysterical,
right,
you know, sexism, because we all know that even if you're having a bad, you know, bad time, and one is not going to, doesn't have to affect the way that you, you know, can,
right,
the way you think.
Because men's egotistical reactions to having their decisions called into question and the potential,
right,
rants and outrages that they could have.
Right, exactly. When they, what about when
is
they
acceptable.
Have, right, or if they're a little ornery because they haven't, you know, had their little whatever for a while, their nookie.
Right.
And so what about that when the testosterone is over for the most dangerous drug in the world?
Right.
That's, I wouldn't want him around the button.
Exactly.
Okay, I will never be expected to change my name upon marriage or questioned if I don't change my name. This has been a big bugaboo thing for me all these years.
Yeah.
Because I always wondered, and I, and it was very important to me with, you know, with my daughters that, you know, that their name was something that we spent so much time, you know, sort of giving to them. Why should they give it up for some schmuck that there's a 50% chance they'll divorce? And they subsume their identity, right?
Right.
You got this name, the name. I don't get it. Like, I would never want to do that. And I always so encourage my daughters, and you encourage your daughters, to not do that. You know, it just seems like, you know, so anyway, I that part of it, I think, you know, needs to change. And again, if men, just like if men.
But in a marriage, children are given the father's name legally,
right,
which
that's
is
right,
why
that's right,
truly progressive feminist men would
hyphenate,
which.
Right. Well, it's
I don't even like that because I still think you're going to get divorced and it's a pain in the ass. But, and having double, the hyphenated name is.
Right.
And but
then
that's
what,
where.
And then what does your kid do with,
right,
you know, it gets to the point you'll be like the.
Right.
My ex-partner with, you know, like a Cuban name that was like 30 syllables long.
Exactly.
You know.
Or that client we have with, you know, the six different names.
Right. Sounds good, but it doesn't fit on any applications.
Right.
If I, okay, so. I'm sorry, I lost my place here.
That's why children should actually have their mother's name, not their father's name.
Well, that would be cool. Why?
Just because. She gave birth to him.
Okay, fair enough.
How do you get...
Exactly.
How do you get...
Right.
Right.
You got the juice.
Right.
That's right.
And why do my kids have to have your name?
Right. I will never... Well, that's right. Fuck that. I will never be... Okay, the decision to hire me will not be based on assumptions about whether or not I might choose to have a family sometime soon. That's a big one for us in our work, right? The idea that if you think, you know, and they ask that question, we have cases every... Including right now.
Mm-hmm.
With how's it going? Is the shop closed yet? Are you going to have any more? Are you going to have...
Right.
Even when they're not... They know they're not supposed to ask it. They want to know because it impacts upon... They think it impacts upon their business. It's a pain in the ass to have women out of maternity leave. So, you know, unless there's, you know, expectations and regulation and enforcement, you know,
mm-hmm,
companies will always... Like it was back still in the 60s with your pregnancy was a firing offense.
Right.
Okay, and 90% of the world's billionaires are men, and they didn't get there by random chance. Every major religion in the world is led primarily by people of my own sex. Even God in most major religions is pictured as male. Most major religions argue that I should be the head of my household, while my wife and children should be subservient to me. And this is where I think religion takes a huge chunk of the culpability for the state.
Well, because it was initially to control the masses.
But that was the organized dogmatic part. That wasn't what Jesus or Buddha or Lao Tzu or Muhammad had in mind, I dare say.
Of course not.
Okay. If I have a wife or living girlfriend, chances are we'll divide up household chores so that she does most of the labor, and in particular the most repetitive and unrewarding tasks. And maybe
totally.
That's right. And that not be because I say, you know, you do this shit. It's just that's the way the cookie seems to crumble, and then you're going to clean up the cookie probably more. Like, I mean, there are differences with the neat-nick type of men that do that, but most of the time, right, it does seem to devolve on the woman. Okay. If I have children with my girlfriend or wife, I can expect her to do most of the basic child care, such as changing diapers and feeding. Same issue. If I have children with my wife or girlfriend and it turns out that one of us needs to make career sacrifices to raise the kids, chances are we'll both assume the career sacrifice should be hers. Perhaps the only exception to that will be if hers is clearly so much more lucrative.
Well, but even when hers was so much more lucrative,
that's right.
He still didn't want to stay home because his ego would not allow him to give up.
Who the heck is she talking about? Okay, assuming I am heterosexual, magazines, billboards, television, movies, pornography, and virtually all of media is filled with images of scantily clad women intended to appeal to me sexually. Such images of men exist, but are rarer. I am under much less pressure to be thin than my female counterparts. Word. If I'm fat, I probably suffer fewer social and economic consequences for being fat than women do. We have 1 minute left.
I was going to say, so let's, you know, we can go on and on.
Yeah,
we could do another whole show on
this. And on average, I am not interrupted by women as often as women are interrupted by men. Okay, I'll leave it with
Except
that.
Except I like to interrupt
you.
And
I have one more. Complete strangers generally do not walk up to me on the street and tell me to smile.
Yeah,
that's
true.
That's, you know, there's no street
Because you're already smiling because you have white male privilege.
That's right.
Always smiling.
I'm always smiling. That's true because I understand. I understand that I'm aware of my male privilege. You should try it, guys. Be aware of your male privilege. You know what? It doesn't take away any of your juice. It actually gives you, I think it gives you a certain amount of, it buffers it a little bit and allows you to be less angry and much more inclusive and even better to yourself.
Much more present. More of yourself present.
And that will inure to your benefit.
And in gratitude and recognition for the gifts that you have.
But you'll make more money anyway.
Exactly.
You just might not care about it so much then. So on behalf of our show, Women's Rights in the Workplace, Deborah Orell, Jack Tuckner, and Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock, and Sipser, we thank you for staying with us and listening to our male privilege, white privilege rant show today. We hope you enjoyed it. And we're going to be off next week for Labor Day, which is a day that you should be resting, although we'll talk perhaps the following week about what has become of Labor Day and what it should have been. So we'll see you in 2 weeks on the Women's Rights in the Workplace show with Jack Tuckner. Oh, and our guest then will be Edward Steinberg, a prominent personal injury attorney, will give you a lot of good tips about certain issues, some of them workplace and labor law, and we're looking forward to that conversation. So enjoy the long Labor Day weekend. Be safe. Stand up for yourself. Speak truth to power. And remember, whatever else you do, don't quit your job. Don't quit. You'll lose all of your leverage. Just for now.